Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day. You podcast or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. And for the most up-to-date news on Indiana basketball, football, and recruiting news, go to thehoosier.com now with On3. Just go to thehoosier.com and subscribe today. On3 has great national writers like Ari Wasserman, Andy Staples, and Steve Wiltfong covering football, Pete Nakos, Jamie Shaw, and Joe Tipton breaking basketball stories every day. In addition to that, our own local coverage with Alec Lasley, Kyler Staley, and Zach Browning covering everything Indiana just for you. Go to thehoosier.com, subscribe today.
To Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Ayler's gone! Goodbye, touchdown!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming to you on this Tuesday. Happy to have you along. Appreciate you. No matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, or the voice of the region on 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB in Hammond at Chicago, and on Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. Just keep it locked right where you got it. No reason to go anywhere else. If you're following us on YouTube, then make sure you're subscribed. Hit that notifications toggle. You don't miss anything that way. Appreciate you. Great night last night. Wow. As expected, a tremendous championship game. I still don't know how Houston lost that game. Man, they controlled it. They did what they wanted to do. They made it. They mucked it up in the first half. They made it a Houston kind of a game. Their defense was smothering. Florida couldn't score. They were on par to score 40 points for the game at just past the 10-minute mark in the first half. They had 10 points, and that was a Houston kind of game, and it was going their way until it wasn't. And even at the end, they just didn't get it done. And you know, for everybody that has complained about, you know, Indiana having those problems during the season, could have been worse. Could have happened in a national championship game, as it did for Houston last night on back-to-back possessions to end the game. They turned the ball over and unable to get a shot off and a shot at winning a national championship. And Florida gets it done, winning their third national title. Congratulations to the Gators, to our buddy Cabro down there covering them down in San Antonio. Todd Golden becomes the youngest coach since Jimmy Valvano. Golden is 39. I think Jimmy V was 37 when he won it back in 83. But and it would have been, Kelvin Sampson would have been the oldest coach to win a national championship game. But appreciate everybody hitting us up on the hotline as well. Yeah, and that reminded me. I've been thinking about this for a couple of days. The names on Florida's roster. How many of those guys had you ever heard of? Todd Golden. Before last season, how many of you have ever heard of him? Definitely before he got to Florida. He was at San Francisco. And up until this season, had not won a single NCAA tournament game. So everybody, when you're throwing out these stats about Connor Enright comes to mind for an example. I saw quite a few comments saying that he wasn't brought here to start. I'm like, really? I have no idea what Darren DeVries will do with him or anybody else. Practice has not even started. I don't know how someone can guess who's going to do what, when, and where. You can't do that, man. Next year is a new year. It's a different season. You cannot judge everything on the past. You just can't. If you would have, then Todd Golden wouldn't even have been allowed to coach in the championship game because he hadn't even won a tournament game prior to this season's tournament. So just don't get all beat up on what somebody did under a different situation in a different situation. Everything is different, man. That's why just chill out. Chill. Larry says he would like to see Rock go after a couple of, I guess he meant JUCO players, like Smart and Garrett. Well, yeah, if you can find a Smart and a Garrett in JUCO now, good luck to you. They'll certainly be welcome. But if you look at who Darren DeVries is slowly bringing in, these are not names that are, again, jumping off the page, but it doesn't matter. This is about culture. It's about fit. It's about getting the right guys for him and his system in his mind. Lamar Wilkerson, someone we'll talk about. Pete Nakos from On Three will join us. In addition to that, Reed Bailey commits to Indiana. But Sam Houston State guard Lamar Wilkerson has been a name that has started to pump out some buzz with Indiana. Many people have confirmed Indiana's involvement, and he's a 6'5 guard. And he's from Sam Houston State. These guys are not from these big time programs. And it's not, doesn't have to be about that. Again, you have to get the right guys, the right fit. So let the coaches do what they do. Let them get the players that they think will work for them. Why? I don't think that I know more than a guy that's being paid millions of dollars to do it right now. Now, that was not the case prior. It's not that I thought I knew more. There was plenty to question. There's nothing to question right now. You can't question something that hasn't happened. So let them do what they want to do, how they set it up, how they want to set it up. Get the team that they think that they need to get. Get the pieces that they think that they need to get, because it obviously wasn't working before. You got a different day. It's a different dawn. It's dawned on a different day now. And I am not going to question somebody who knows what they need. That's like Kurt Cignetti. We saw it last year. How many people questioned, they've got all those mid-major guys. Well, they're not going to be able to compete in the Big Ten. Well, they won't be able to win games in the Big Ten. They can't play Michigans. I'm sorry. Yes, exactly. Right fit. The right guys, the right system, the right coaching. It all has to come together, people, like it did last night for Florida. What a great tournament. Great way to end the tournament. Houston and Duke, Houston and Florida, great games. What more could you ask for? Indiana Creek Walkers thinks that Indiana got the best shooter in the portal. It is a new day. But yeah, Reed Bailey gives some depth. I mean, not depth, some girth. Big 6'10 dude that can step out on the perimeter. Man, Thunder over Louisville. Canceled because of the flooding. Floodwaters everywhere. Cannot believe that. That's right. Shooters, you say. What is that you say? Shooting? Novel concept is right. Yeah, unfortunately, it ain't the good old days. Those days have moved on. LSU, they have hired Milwaukee Bucks global scouting director Ronald Dupree. He's a former player, as their general manager. Also, Yastia Rosemond is on the LSU staff. But I mentioned that GM position because, you know, I'm not sure that that's one that gets filled by Indiana this year or not. But it's one that they definitely will have. It's almost an impossibility not to have it. But if you notice, he was the global scouting director for the NBA Milwaukee Bucks. Think about that. That's who's going to be in that position. It's not going to be your favorite IU player. It's not. You guys got to get the IU stuff out of your head. IU is what it is, when it is, at that moment. It's not what it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago. It's what it is today, right now. So live in the new, baby. Live in the new. But yeah, you've got to, like I said a minute ago, it's a new day. Kelvin Sampson, there's probably a lot of people rooting for him to lose last night. I couldn't have cared less. It's just not that big of a deal for something that was so long ago. And it wasn't him that screwed Indiana. It was the president, first of all. And then it was Indiana for, instead of fighting that crap. Oh yeah. Well, let us bend over. What else would you like for us to do? Let us just screw our entire program. Man, that was Indiana stuff. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Mitt Winter is someone we've had on many times before. He'll join us in the second hour, I believe, but, a sports attorney, the house settlement is upon us, but you still have people like Villanova's former Villanova player, Chris Jenkins, who hit a big shot back in, I think, 2016. He's suing the NCAA, opting out of the house settlement. He's going to file his own lawsuit, which, with so few of them, it might be a good idea. You know why? What happens when you sue the NCAA? You win. It's like an automatic. You win. But that's what I would do. That's just me personally. But who knows? Lamar Wilkerson, Sam Houston, shooting guard. We'll talk about him when Pete Nakos from On Three joins us. One of the national writers, basketball analyst, recruiting. He's on it. On Three is all over it. TheHoosier.com, now On Three, along with Joe Tipton, Alec Lasley, breaking stories left and right with guys. Go to TheHoosier.com. Become a subscriber. I've never asked you guys really to do that other than, you know, supporting our guest and whatnot, but thehoosier.com, great partners of ours. They will allow us On Three to have great interviews for you guys with guys like Pete Nakos and Joe Tipton, who should probably be on this week as well. And if you don't know who Joe Tipton is, then you're not in tune with recruiting in any stretch of the imagination. Because he's about as locked in as there is anyone out there working it. So, looking forward to having both of those guys on this week. But today, it's Pete Nakos, and we'll look forward to that. Let's see. Mike Lewis is a name that Indiana fans might want to keep their eye on, but we'll talk about all that biz in a little while. Man. That's right. I saw someone mention that who won the tournament pool, Larry. Larry. Which Larry? Which Larry won it? I'll have to find that out. But congratulations on winning. Phillip says Jenkins has a unique case hitting the national championship winning shot that is in every film reel for March Madness ever since. Yeah. Talking about Phillip talking about Chris Jenkins, who's filing that lawsuit. His lawsuit is that the NCAA and all the conferences prevented him from making the kind of money he could have made. Well, I mean, again, that's what this house settlement is about, because individually, if you did that with everybody, it would take 10,000 years. I don't know how it would work out. That's the whole point of trying to get that wrapped up. Looking forward to hopefully talking to Mitt about that to see if that can happen. We'll take a quick break. Appreciate you being with us. We've got plenty to get to. Pete Nocco, Simone 3 will join us in this hour. Catch up with the latest signings of IU, names to look at, availability names, and much, much more. Appreciate you being with us. Coming to you from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios, as always. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. Grateful to have you along, as always. Looking forward to talking to Pete Nocco's from On Three here in a little bit. I was looking at the box score from last night's game. Both teams. Do you know how many guys, how deep the rotation went for both teams? Eight guys. Both teams each. Eight guys. That means only three guys came off the bench. That's when everybody gets talking about and hung up on depth and this and that. Well, what you need are healthy, good players. That's it. And you don't need 50 of them. You don't need 15 of them. But you damn sure need eight of them. Maybe nine, but eight. And now something else that jumps out off of the page for Houston. You know how many guys? Let's see, Florida, Alex Condon, he had 12 points, nice night, 5 of 9 shooting. Will Richard, 5 of 10 shooting, great night, 18 points. And then Walter Clayton Jr., 3 of 10, not the best night for him, 1 of 7 from behind the three-point line. Elijah Martin, 1 of 6, those two guys go 2 for 13. As a matter of fact, Florida shot 6 for 24 behind the three-point line for 25%. Big credit of partly that was to Houston's defense, but it goes to show you, they shot 25% and still won this game. But my point was that three different players in double figures for Florida. You know how many Houston had in double figures? One. LJ Cryer. He was 6 of 18. 4 of 11 from the behind the three-point line. The rest of the team hit 2 3-point shots. There were 2 of like 15, the rest of the team. 24%. So there's two teams, both just played in the national championship, that were crappy three-point shooting teams last night. Doesn't matter, once you're in the game, you can still win, especially when the other team's not hitting them. Rebounding, Florida crushed Houston. That's a big area where they were bigger and longer. Assists. Houston on 24 made baskets only had 5 assists. Florida only had 21 made baskets, but 14 assists. Ball movement. That's ball movement, people. And it's easy to say, well, that's Houston's flaw or this and that. Man, they damn near won the national championship game. Probably should have won it. Gave it up. And my point is, don't get hung up on every little game, on every little number. It just happens sometimes. Brian says Houston at times look like they have six guys on the floor with a dude. Let me tell you, I remember talking about it during the game. I'm like, every time you think you're open, and that's with a guy on you, a Houston defender, you think you're still kind of open. You've got one guy on you. The minute that ball hits your hands, there are at least two, if not three guys surrounding you. They are ferocious defensively. Offensively, they're lacking. Rufo, you may have had it kind of right. He said last night that their offense was not disciplined. And the more I thought about it, I do agree with that. At first, I didn't because I don't see them as an undisciplined team, but not disciplined because that's not what they do. That's not what they're the best at. Playing defense, that's what the hell they're the best at. And they did a great job. And a semblance of offense would have won the game for Houston, but they only shoot 34%, say 35% for the game. That's pretty bad. Now, Florida ended up shooting 39.6% for the game. So you've got 39.6% field goal shooting, 25% three-point shooting for a national champion. A national champion. The runner-up, 35% and 24%. And then, to top it off, Houston goes 9 of 14 for 64% from the free throw line. You know, they played a great game defensively. They mucked it up. But looking at the numbers, they didn't deserve to win that game. They just didn't do enough right. They only had 9 turnovers while forcing 13, but it's too many of these other numbers. And for that particular game. But, you know, they were there and to the victor go the spoils. To the victor go the spoils. Florida pulling down a third national championship game in the since the 90s. You know, they won those two back-to-back. Now they've got 3 national titles, 3 banners hanging up there. They're just not in the... I don't see, and I had that conversation with Todd, I don't see them in the... pantheon of blue blood status. But although it would be difficult in the SEC, Todd Golden is set to keep going. I mean, he did it this year with, like, again, guys that you had never heard of. Denzel Aberdeen, Micah Hanglotten, Thomas Howe, Elijah Martin, Walter Clayton Jr., you know now, Will Richard, Ruben Chinlu and Alex Condon. How many of those names were household names? Yeah. No, they're not. They were not big swingers in the NIL department or any of that. But you know what they're going to get? Big old fat ring, baby. Big old ring. Oh, that's right. What did I say? The 90s. Thank you very much, John. Florida. Time just flies by. 06 and 07. Well, I said the 90s, didn't I? You know, it starts to run together. William thinks DeVries was a great hire for Indiana, and we'll certainly find out. I think that he's as good as anything. Would Chris Beard have been better? You know what? As much as people think that they know, and it would seem like it on paper, maybe it's not. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe there's stuff that you don't know about. Just remember, you don't know what you don't know. Just always keep that in mind. I think that Scott Dolson has done such an incredible job, and he knows that his reputation is on the line here, and it matters to him because it matters to him that of getting that program back to elite status. Especially after doing what happened with football, he knows the opportunity that lies ahead. If you can get Indiana basketball going and Indiana football, that's never happened. That doesn't happen at a lot of schools, period. But it damn sure has never happened with Indiana. I mean, you can talk about the 80s when under Bill Mallory, when they were a solid program, but they were not CFP type program. And, you know, I've talked about them. They have the opportunity to go back to the CFP next year. We'll talk more about that later. They're going to have to win on the road, baby. But spring practice going on right now. Spring game, what, just 1 week? What is today? Today is Tuesday. What'll be like 2 weeks away this Thursday, or is it 1 week? Who knows? Yeah, well, Brian, you got to get over it. Says, we know what we've seen on the court with Beard. Don't much care about his domestic situation years ago. Well, guess what? He's not the coach at Indiana, so it doesn't matter. He's the coach at Ole Miss. So, yeah, I don't even remember the so much going on. I can't even remember what today's date is. My gosh, I know it's early on in the month, but still can't even get it up there. Yeah, the 8th. So, 10 days from yesterday, baby, which is a week from this Thursday. How many of you are heading up? Anybody going to the spring game? I know moving it to a Thursday kind of jacked it around a little bit. But Easter weekend, that's why that decision was made. Gritty's going to be there. Heath asking Lamar Wilkerson, more than likely coming to IU, question mark. Jason's going to be at the football game. He's into IU football, and with good reason. Like I said, I keep thinking they're going to be, their team will be as good next year, if not better as a team. I don't know that their record will be. Well, I don't expect the record to be quite the same because their schedule is juiced with trips to, well, after playing Illinois, then you've got trips to Iowa, then to Oregon, and later to Penn State. So, so you got that going for you. Looking forward to Pete joining us. Going to take a pause for the cause. And hopefully when we come back, we'll start talking some transfer portal basketball news. Appreciate you being with us on this Tuesday from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Make sure you're heading out to the Hard Truth. You know, it is springtime. I saw Gritty sent me a picture. Her sister was out there. Great looking photos. And I've got some photos from others over the course of time. Thanks, guys. Anytime you go to the Hard Truth, make sure to buy Hard Truth. Send me a picture of it. Appreciate you. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Right, welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along for the ride. I forgot to send the link to Pete, so I had to get that sent over in time. Hopefully he can join us as soon as possible. I think he will. He just got that, so... looking forward to Pete from On Three, one of the national basketball recruiting analysts, and has done a tremendous job. I think that he put the prediction in for, I can't remember if it was Reed Bailey or Lamar Wilkerson, that Indiana has making hay with. As I know a lot of fans are, they want to hear, they see these names on other teams that are signing these guys, which I understand. You want to see that happen. But there is, as Alex said, there's a culture and a fit that, especially for this first team, that Darren DeVries is looking for. He does not want to just go add names. You know, you had that happen a season ago. Just grabbing guys because, oh, well, he did this there and he did this there. And well, how did that work out? one of the most expensive NIL budgets in all of college basketball that was basically, in essence, throwing money away. Mainly, I wanted to say mainly because the inability to truly recruit guys, to get guys to want to come play for you, for your program. Indiana hasn't had that. They have seriously had to go buy talent. But that is not because, that's because of one reason. There wasn't anything that was really drawing to these outside guys. You know, I know that people long for the days where you get all of these guys that are loving, they're playing for the school and giving it the old college try. And I'm not saying that that's just completely dead, but it's on life support, but it's not the same. And it won't be until there is some kind of change in the transfer portal, with the ability to just move at will. What I don't understand, and I look forward to hopefully getting Mitt on, is to ask why, okay, the NCAA has made up all these rules in the past now, and they've been sued and lost a lot of them, but they're a private organization. Why can't they make up their own rule on which all the schools agree to that doesn't limit anybody on money? But what it does is limit the amount of changes you can make within a 5-year period. But I don't think that that will come until there has been collective bargaining, as Zach Osterman spoke about last week. Because that will be, you have to have an agreement to where you're not going to get these lawsuits from people like Chris Jenkins, who was suing from a decade ago. And unless that happens, this is going to continue to happen. Return on investment on NIL, that's a novel concept. Certainly, boy, if I'd have been one of the big-time donors to Indiana last year, don't think I wouldn't have been asking about that. I mean, they're not looking for instant gratification. Those are people that are truly trying to help the program. But I'll be honest with you, while you cannot have a say in who they recruit, if I was giving enough of what I considered enough money to where my opinion should at least be heard, it would be expressed in a what in the hell is going on kind of a way last season and the season before that. Probably was. And okay, and then this is something too I'm going to jump on real quick. Normally I don't, but this is stupid. I saw somebody kind of put this out yesterday, and Heath is putting it up, says, who is getting hung up on IU having only white guys? First of all, they have 4 guys. So chill on 4 out of the 15. Pete Nakos, I'm on 3, jumping in and joining us now. Pete, I know you heard that last part. I'm trying to stay away from that kind of stuff, but I happen to see somebody post this yesterday. I see a pattern here, and I'm like, dude, they've got 3 guys out of the portal, out of a potential 15-man roster with 1 incoming recruit. Just chillax on who they got. I'm like, it's crazy. It's like any single little thing, boy, people will find something that I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yep, exactly.
How have you been, sir? Appreciate you joining us, by the way.
I'm good, Jim. Thanks so much for joining On3, too.
Absolutely. What a great partner On3 is. Just such incredible guys like yourself, breaking stories. Joe Tipton as well on the basketball side. Jamie Shaw, great group of guys, and on the football side as well. But we're talking hoops right now, and that's what the Indiana people care about.
Yeah.
Was it Lamar Wilkerson that you were talking about yesterday?
Yeah, I think Indiana's trending right now for Lamar Wilkerson. But, you know, Florida obviously just won the national championship last night, and hearing that they're going to try to, you know, make a case to get involved in that recruitment as well. But when I wrote that yesterday, I really liked where Indiana sat.
How has that changed in 12 hours?
No, I don't think it's changed, but I do think from what I understand, Florida is going to try to make an effort to get involved as they're right. As Todd Golden now tries to approach the offseason. But I think that Indiana definitely has a leg up just because they've been recruiting so much to this point.
Yeah. And I was going over Florida's roster mainly earlier, and I've asked people, I go, how many of these guys had you ever heard of before this season, especially?
Yeah, exactly.
Where you're paying attention. These are guys that were not these top portal gets or this, that, and the other thing. Todd Golden had never won an NCAA game.
Yeah.
So people get hung up on every little thing, and they magnetize small details. And I'm like, just relax, man. Let it happen. The guy hadn't won a single game. He wins six in a row. He'll take six in a row over six spread out over 6 years anytime.
Who knew about Walter Clayton before this year? I mean,
my God.
He was fun to watch at Iona, but I mean, it's a different level.
And that's why people, when you see guys come up, like whether it's Reed Bailey or Lamar Wilkerson or any of the other guys that Indiana has looked at so far that are Connor Enright, people, I'm like, dude, different system. You cannot compare. It's not apples and it's apples and oranges is what it yeah. is. It's the same game, but it's not. It's a different team, different style, different coach, different league. All that stuff matters. And there's a reason Darren DeVries is getting certain guys right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, with all of this is it's hard to step in right now. And where Darren DeVries kind of stepped in, and you have to deal with the portal right away. You don't really get a chance to breathe. And I'm well aware that that's a plus side of being a head coach in college basketball at a high major level. But it's also a lot to try to put together a roster on the fly. I really like the Reed Bailey pickup. That wasn't an easy one, too. Ohio State was offering some serious money behind the scenes. And then you look at Lamar Wilkerson here, and I mean, he averaged 20.5 points per game. He comes from Sam Houston State. I really like what DeVries is doing at this point. Then we'll see how the Wilkerson recruitment kind of ends.
From what you've seen recently in the past with Darren DeVries, we kind of know his style, more perimeter oriented, more spacing guys that are athletic and long, not kind of anti-Purdue is what I compare it to, as we see Matt Painter going right back to that well with those bigs he keeps pulling in. But this is not your grandpa's Indiana team, especially not what they've seen in the last decade or plus or so. This team should be more up and down, more perimeter shooting, less paint play. The paint play will probably come more from offensive rebounds than it will from set plays.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And Wilkerson kind of backs up that theory too, right? He's a lengthy guard who, I mean, he averages 4 rebounds a game and everything, but he also isn't a big man. And I think that also sheds some light on how expensive it is to get a big man out of the portal, right? Like they don't grow on trees, and the ones that are available come at a really high premium price. So adding some guards can be a little easier sometimes than trying to go get like 2 really good big men. And it's kind of the nature of the portal. And then also what Darren DeVries wants to build.
Yeah. And the money itself, crazy.
Yeah.
If you could just look at the last 2 years, I know it's doubled. Each time over year doubled. And I think it more than doubled from last year to this year, maybe a 1.5 times, which is only making these guys happier. I understand that,
yeah,
but it's also kind of leading to the Chris Jenkins of the world who is now suing the NCAA for,
right,
you know, back payments, and everybody wants their piece.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you. I think he's making a smart move because he's going to sue the NCAA. Winner, you won. Thank you very much for playing. It's like nobody loses to the NCAA in court.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this one, so Chris Jenkins isn't the first one. I mean, there's been a lot. Reggie Bush has sued. A bunch of Michigan players have sued. Some Ohio State players have too. So Chris Jenkins is just the latest. A lot of these haven't like been successful. So we'll see what happens here. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's just another example of how the NCAA was so late in allowing NIL and dollars to flow to athletes. And now we're kind of seeing it happen at a rapid pace right now in the transfer portal.
Michael comments, is looking forward to a different style play. IU has not been fun to watch for the last 8 years. And that's the truth. They had Archie Miller, which had zero offense whatsoever, and a defense that looked like it was looking for its head inside of its shorts each game in, game out. And then, of course, with Mike Woodson, we know we saw the 80s-style basketball that was just, it looked like 80s-style basketball. And now they're going to get, I hate to say this, but I'm going to fall back on one of my colleagues, Todd Leary, former IU player, played for Bob Knight, who compared DeVries' style sort of to Bob Knight's in that it's predicated on defense. Offensively, though, it's predicated on decision-making by the offensive players, which is what the motion offense was about, making your decision off of screens. But there was a lot of ball movement. And with more spacing now, I think you're going to see a lot more ball movement and a lot more shooting from Indiana than you've seen in the past.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Seeing the comments here, I do not have any insight on the remaining assistant spots right now. We'll try to dig in that today, though.
Yeah, most of those have been full. And earlier I talked about the GM spot. That is something that Indiana is going to fill, but I don't know that that happens this year because they have so much going on right now. He's still trying to fill out his that final spot on the staff. I'm not sure if he's actually got the guy, and we just don't know that yet. But and also trying to fill a roster. I saw that LSU just hired Ronald Dupree, former Milwaukee Bucks global scouting director.
Yeah.
And I said that twice, global scouting director. Let those words sink in, because it's not going to be your favorite old IU basketball player. It's going to be somebody that has connections like you, connected to this game, connected into finding these players.
Yeah. You know, when you look at a GM position now, it's so much. You got to evaluate talent. You have to put dollars together. You got to be able to step into a room and easily fundraise. And then more than all, you got to be able to negotiate with an agent and hold your ground, because if Indiana has $8 million to spend in the transfer portal, hypothetically, well, you can't spend all of that on just two players. I think we've seen, I'd say arguably in the last year, that you know, the more veteran depth heavy teams have gone deep in March Madness. And, you know, I think it's a different type of basketball we're seeing in college basketball now with, you know, the more experienced guys and also the deeper teams making longer runs into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and you mentioned Indiana has a very, very healthy NIL budget.
Yeah.
And you can add to that the house settlement, which we're probably days away from, or maybe hours, who knows, from being approved, which will take effect on next year's roster as well.
Yeah, yeah. That might be a month away at this point. Yesterday didn't go perfectly for the NCAA, but yeah, it's happening. It's coming.
Yeah, it's definitely. But most teams don't have to rely on that from a basketball standpoint, when most programs, like Indiana, but I shouldn't say most. Most do will rely on that.
Yeah.
Indiana is not one that does. It will just be an added caveat for them that they can add and potentially add more players. But
yeah,
in this first first team, what is crucial for Darren DeVries to get done here? He's got three guys locked in right now, and not including Trent Sisley, who is an incoming freshman.
Well, Jim, you know a little bit more about this than me, but I'd say that they need to finish up building the roster. And then the biggest thing year one is just showing some improvement year over year to what he's taken over from Mike Woodson. So I'd say, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'd say when you say the bar is to make the tournament.
Oh, that has to be a minimum, because that should be a minimum year in, year out.
Yep.
And I know that Indiana fans can come off of having this air that they don't belong in anymore. They can't, but that's how rabid their fan base is.
Yeah.
They doesn't matter. They keep chewing at the bone.
Yep.
So yeah, there's no doubt that making the tournament is the bottom, the bar that competing for a Big Ten title and being competitive next year in the NCAA, I think would be a great place to start.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anyone would expect them to, you know, be a Final Four team. That
right.
Not that it couldn't happen. You never know. Yeah. But that's not an expectation. If anybody has that kind of an expectation, they're a little exuberant.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. But I mean, with the history of Indiana basketball, and obviously it hasn't been in a place where a lot of people want it to be, I'd say for DeVries to show the improvement everyone wants, I would agree that the bar has to be making the NCAA tournament and then making some noise in the opening weekend.
Well, without question, because it's something Indiana fans have not seen
for right
so long, which is incredible to say for a program that was just so consistently good.
Yep.
And year in, year out, making the tournament was, it was just like a high school team in Indiana going to the sectional. Everybody got to go. And that's how it seemed. And boy, when you lose that and you see other teams that are not, that don't have that tradition doing that, it, I'm sure it hits hard home for those yep. fans.
For sure.
Who are some of the players that are also out there and available right now that Indiana could pop? I know you're not covering Indiana per se.
Yeah.
We're regions of the country. There's a lot of guys out there. Who are some of the names that are getting hot now, especially since the title game is over?
Well, yeah, the top name right now is Jaden Quaintance, the Arizona State transfer, and that kind of shaping up to be like an Auburn and Kentucky battle. The Michigan State transfer, Trey Holloman, still on the block. He's visiting North Carolina, NC State, Villanova, and Baylor in the future. And then the Baylor guard, Rob Wright, announced yesterday he's going in the portal. He hasn't actually gone in yet, but that'll be another big domino. And then I saw someone mention in the comments, like, Aaron Bradshaw hasn't really done anything yet. He went in from Ohio State. I'm not exactly sure where he's going to end up and who wants him. He's been at Kentucky and Ohio State, and it hasn't exactly gone perfectly. So those are some of the bigger names left on the board at this point. And then you have the Ian Jackson went in yesterday from North Carolina. A lot of people see him landing at St. John's, but he could also just go to the NBA draft. And then RJ Lewis, the St. John's kid, entered the portal. He could easily go to the draft. No schools have really emerged as like a top contender yet, because I think a lot of people are waiting to see if he's going to go to the draft.
Pete Nakos from On Three. That'll wrap it up for this hour. Pete, if you got a few minutes, I'd like to take a quick break and come back, talk about a few other players. How are you sitting on time?
Yeah, I can do it. Sounds good.
Sounds great, buddy. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday. Appreciate you being with us. Jim Coyle with you, as always, joined by Pete Nakos from On3.com. Make sure you go to On3 for all of your content and coverage, especially to Hoosier.com, covering the Hoosiers and great people like Pete providing some great inside information. I'm looking over On3's Way Too Early Top 25, one of my favorite things that is put out nowadays, and I'm joking about it. I hate Way Too Early lists. They're just ridiculous. With that caveat, I'll add, I did send out a tweet last night, I think, though, that said, is it too early to say Creighton is a top five team next year. My God, they've been on fire in the portal. Although they're listed at 15th in or 16th actually in on threes.
Well, they've lost some guys too. Our portal rankings are a little different than like some other services where we try to factor in like the players they lost too. But yeah, man, Creighton has done a hell of a job right now in the portal to this point.
And Illinois, Brad Underwood. I mean, he's like a magician. This side, it disappears. This side, it appears. It's like he just pulls up the sheet and boom, there's a new player that is incredible. Now he's got both of the Vesich brothers together, which I loved watching Tomislav play. He was fun to watch. They did lose their main man, though. Kasper Jakusconis, is he going the NBA route, I would assume?
I would assume. I'm just reading your comments here. Someone brought up Elijah Freeman. I don't know a ton on him right now. I know Kentucky's been in contact, and I know Indiana's been in contact.
Yeah, we'll talk about him with Alec Lasley later this week, unless something happens prior to that. But he is also one of the players that Indiana's looked at. Michigan State down there at 23rd. I'm kind of surprised by them being down there below UCLA, Wisconsin, Illinois. Let's see, Purdue, which amazes me that they're – well, I guess, no, they've got Trey Kaufman, Renfretz, Laurie, and Braden Smith back. Yeah. But they do lose not only Miles Colvin, but Heidi. Heidi as well.
You know, Michigan State's going to be really interesting. Like, Tom Izzo hasn't really done a ton in the portal to this point. He's lost a lot of guys. I'm very interested to see how it all works out there.
Michigan, too. They got one of my favorite players from Illinois, Maurez Johnson. I loved watching him play as a freshman, man. He's a little beast down there. But they have already added four guys to the roster.
Yeah.
And so our friend Dusty May is reloading.
So the big thing at Michigan is going to be is if the UAB transfer reacts to Lindenborg. So he committed there, but he very well could still go to the NBA draft. But I think if Michigan is able to hold on to him, I mean, Michigan next year could be real scary in the Big Ten if Yaxel doesn't go to the NBA.
And if you can hear, you may not be able to, the little notifications, that's Pete's phone going off constantly because of information coming in. That's how it is, unfortunately, if you're someone like Pete who lives with that ringing in your head. First of all, how did you get so entrenched? Because to be able to pull out the stories that you're able to pull out and make those contacts, that's not easy to do.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, Jim, I've mainly done football to this point with the football transfer portal and trying to do the coaching carousel this past fall and stuff like that. But now trying to do what I can in basketball, and that's been a lot of fun too. And it's a lot of relationship building and trying to, you know, obviously build up a network that I can rely on and build sources I can trust.
Well, speaking of football, Indiana, of course, in the midst of spring ball right now, and I know that I didn't bring you on to talk about that, but since I know that you're pretty knowledgeable about it, Indiana with that unbelievable breakout season under Kurt Cignetti last season, of course, expectations will be high in Bloomington again, which, first of all, saying that expectations are high for football, I don't know how long it will ever take me to get over that. I did go to school at IU, and I know all the history of IU football. But last year was crazy. But it was not a one-off. No. I keep saying that I think that this year's team will be a better team. I don't think that they'll have the same record. I think 10-2 is probably the top side for the regular season. But that is going to require Indiana to win at either Iowa, Oregon, or Penn State. But if they want to go back to the college football playoffs, they're going to have to win one of those games.
Yeah, but, you know, I think the biggest offseason win for Indiana was getting Mendoza from Cal, Fernando Mendoza. I mean, that came down to the wire. I remember it popped on Christmas Eve, and that wasn't something – So he secretly visited Indiana. I'm sure you knew about this too. But he visited Indiana. He was kept on the DL. But then he snuck in a visit to Georgia. And then he was in Miami when he made his decision. And like, a lot of people did not know where he was going. Even some people working with him didn't know where he was going until that very last minute. So I think that was a huge win. I've liked what they've continued to do. They got one of the Notre Dame offensive linemen who went in towards the end of the winter. That was a big one.
And then actually the guy that was from Tennessee, the tight end, I think was originally from Notre Dame as well, I think.
Yeah. Kurt Cignetti has continued to do everything he said he was going to do, and he's continued to build a roster this offseason through the transfer portal. And I think that's going to be crucial for Indiana to continue to win year over year. And, you know, you're going to have those schools every year that are going to get like 3 5-star recruits or something like that. I don't know when Indiana gets to that point. I think it's safe to say, Jim, we can agree that they're not going to do it in the first 2 years of the Cignetti era. So the way he's going to have to continue to win is in the portal, and he's proven to do that to this point. And, man, the Big Ten is so interesting. It's so top loaded. You got like an Ohio State, a Penn State, Michigan, Oregon, and then Indiana. Like, and we haven't said that in a very long time. And I know it's started to happen in a recent year. So I would say anything it can happen this year.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Fernando not knowing where he might wind up. The great thing for Indiana is his brother Alberto Mendoza, his younger brother, who followed him in Miami in high school. It was the Fernando show for 2 years or however, and then it was the Alberto show. I think that is going to be unfold in Bloomington as well. I think Fernando is going to lead this team for the next 2 years, and then Alberto will be in his third season by then, I think,
yeah,
on campus. So he will be ready. It's either now or never by then. Yeah. Once you've been in the program by 3 years, if you're not ready, then you're not the guy. Yeah. But I think that you're going to see the Mendoza show for the next 4 years at Indiana. And that's a good thing because, A, it's continuity. B, we know what Fernando did last year, throwing for over 3,000 yards while getting sacked 41 times. Even Indiana's line did not give up those kind of numbers. I think that Curtis Work may have went down maybe 15 times all season.
Yeah,
I'll have to look that up, but it was a lot less. So, and like you talked about, they beefed up the offensive line. They brought in Roman Hemby in the backfield as well.
Yep.
You've got Omar Cooper Jr. back, Elijah Surratt, EJ Williams. They did lose Tyler Harris in the slot spot, which was hard, but they've got the portal and time to replace him.
Yeah. Well, they're definitely going to have to hit the wide receiver room hard in the portal. You know, that's definitely going to be an area or a point of emphasis during the portal. And then, you know, looking at their schedule right here, they don't play Ohio State. Now, I know that they're at Oregon and they're also at Penn State, but they don't have Michigan.
And at Iowa.
Yeah, at Iowa too. And I'm really intrigued to see what Iowa can do, especially with the
new quarterback.
Mark Grinnell. Yeah. Iowa is a team that's going to be interesting to watch. Now, the other thing too is someone mentioned Nebraska here. I'm fascinated to see how it all kind of works out at Nebraska.
Somebody's under the gun in Lincoln.
Yeah, but Dylan Raiola had a pretty strong freshman year. They've tried to address the wide receiver position. Hardly Gilmore just left the team. So there's still some spots that Matt Rhule is going to have to figure out, but Nebraska, in the same vein as Indiana, is probably playing some of their better football than they have in recent memory.
Well, without question. And prediction stuff is dumb, so I don't know why I'm going to ask this, but you stay in touch with all the what's going on and you've seen the schedule. Do you think 10-2 is a doable mark for that Indiana team, this Indiana team?
Let's see. It's
going to be tough. I get that. Trust doable. Me. They have to win a road game.
Now, it's doable. I don't know if it's a gimme by any means, but it's definitely.
Oh, no.
And that non-conference slate definitely helps them out to get to that 10-2.
And the fact that 8-4 is probably what, like, kind of a the bottom line of what I think that they will be. That, again, in and of itself is insane to say, because there have been so few 8-win seasons for Indiana still. And for that to be a bottom mark looked at is an incredible thought. But what a great time for this to be happening, because it's kind of either get with the program in football or get off the pot for programs and schools. And buddy, Indiana about missed the party. They got there just in time, because this train is kind of leaving the station.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, you know, we talked about revenue sharing and everything, and there's going to be a lot of schools who choose to go be a basketball school and be a football school, that they're going to disperse revenue. And Kurt Cignetti arrived at the right time if Indiana's going to be a football school. So I know Indiana's always going to be a basketball school at heart, but the with how revenue sharing is going to work out, and then what they did last year, I think Indiana football is definitely in a good position to continue to win in the years ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it, man. What is up next for you?
Well, in exactly 8 days, the college football transfer portal opens for this week. So, yeah, it's trying to wrap up basketball, see what that looks like, and then get into football, and then catch my breath in May.
And Indiana, what do you think that they're, from the outside, their biggest needs might be now, other than filling that slot position?
Yeah, definitely wide receiver. I like what the running back room kind of looks like right now. You know, I don't think you can ever have too many linemen on either side of the ball. So I think that if they can add anyone there, that'll be big. And then, yeah, I mean, that's kind of it for me. That secondary might be one of the better ones of the Big Ten, so there aren't a ton of needs there.
Yeah, Indiana's very fortunate defensively. They have a rarity of having anchors of an All-American on the line with why I'm forgetting. I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden. You've got Aiden Fisher at linebacker and D'Angelo Pons in the secondary. Daggone it. Oh, man, who am I forgetting there on the edge? An All-American. Anyway, I'll come up with it. My brain is not working great. But to be anchored like that, an All-American on the line, an All-American in at the backers, and an All-American in the backfield, that's a greatly solidified defense.
Yeah.
And then, of course, their coach is not doing a bad job either.
No, not at all. But, yeah, no, I'm really interested to see what Indiana looks like next year.
Looking forward to it. Pete Nackles from On3.com. Cannot thank you enough. As always, brother, look forward to doing it again.
You bet. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. Pete Nackles from On3.com. Make sure you go to thehoosier.com now with On3 for a complete coverage of all things that are going on, breaking news and stories like from Pete and Joe Tipton and Steve Wiltfong and many, many others. Go to thehoosier.com, subscribe. It's $1 for the first month, and then only 50% off for the rest of the year. It's like $5 a month. But go support those guys. It allows us to provide great content to you. Would appreciate you greatly if you did. Got to take a break. We're back with more on the other side from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Be nice out soon, eventually, hopefully. We will have decent weather. It's just not at the moment because it's, this morning was 32 degrees. That's not acceptable. Not acceptable, man. This is April, for gosh sakes. But you look down at forecast and high getting up to 48 today. Come on, man. 56 tomorrow, 67, and then drops back down to 50, 61, 68, then 76. A week from yesterday. Holy smokes. Cannot wait. Hopefully we'll get some good weather coming our way. And looking forward to it. Appreciate everybody on the hotline as well, like I said. And I'm looking for a comment that I marked a minute ago, but now I cannot find the daggone thing. But, oh, there it is. Philip pointed out the women's national title game viewers last year, 18.9 million viewers. This year, 8.5. That's a gigantic loss. But it's no offense, but it is also, it shows how women's basketball is very fleeting in popularity. It's based on just, well, give it the Caitlin Clark effect and Angel Reese and just certain names. But hey, it is what it is, and the numbers don't lie. That's why there are two engines that drive the athletic train especially in college athletics. That's football and men's basketball. And again, it's no knock on anybody else because you got baseball, you got soccer, and everything else. But these are the ones that drive the train. So there's that. Packers wins the UConn, win another national title on the women's side. Jean Ariema, how about that? Fred Poitier, Kalel Ware, 19 points, 17 boards in a win last night versus Philly. Good info. Kalel Ware having a great, great season. Good for him to see that go on as the Pacers continue. What did the Pacers do last night? Speaking of a witch, or they may not have even played. They've got those three home games coming up, and they play again on Thursday. So we'll look forward to that as well. Hopefully Mitt Winter will join us here and we'll talk about this house settlement as that is coming upon us very, very soon. We'll see how that affects things. I don't think it's going to – I wonder how it'll affect Indiana football. Michael says Jalen Lewis was an exciting IU player, but it didn't go well when he transferred. Well, we'll see all of that. Oh man, this is like the Truman Show when you see at the end when he discovers that he's on TV and the show just kind of ends, and you got everybody just staring at the TV wondering what's next. College basketball is over, and it does suck. Let me tell you, Mitt Winter will join us here in just a second at one of the country's more renowned sports attorneys in dealing with things like this house case settlement that I know you've heard about it, probably don't pay a lot of attention to it, but it's revenue sharing is basically what it is. And it's how the NCAA is trying to get this set up. And it's a revenue share, not really collective bargaining, obviously, because the players have not bargained per se. But they're trying to avoid that at all costs. But I just don't know if you can make changes and what changes can be made. I'm looking forward to talking to Mitt about that because he'll know. Well, why can't there be multi-year contracts? That is a question I have. If a player wants to sign a multi-year deal, why can't they? Who says that they can't? And why? There's so much that will go into this. Now, I'm curious to see how this helps Indiana football. Indiana has been relying on the NIL that they could drum up for football, which had gotten much, much better. Don't get me wrong. But this will be on top of that. Now, every other Big Ten team will also have that. So, you know, in comparison to Michigan or Ohio State or Penn State and others, doesn't make much difference. I wonder how much teams like Michigan can throw in themselves. Mitt Winter joining us, one of the country's most renowned sports attorneys. Mitt, how are you, sir?
Doing good. How about yourself?
Cannot complain. Great to see you again. Great to have you on. Thank you so much. I this was not planned, but you have always been great with us and we greatly appreciate you.
No problem.
How much is this added? Were you working in this kind of this side of the industry prior to all the NIL and stuff coming out?
Yeah, I've been working in the college athletics legal world for a pretty long time. I mean, almost 20 years since I got out of law school. So have kind of been in this world and seen all the evolution and change to get up to where we are now.
Well, and there has been quite a bit of that. And you were perfectly prepared because no one would have ever thought
that we are where we are. And man, it is coming at light speed, man. It even last year over this year, or the year before over last year, the last year over this year, the money is doubled and maybe doubled in a half this season. It's like, wow. And that is, that's one issue. But then the biggest issue to me is the unlimited transfers. When you see guys that play for four different teams, I hate that. I know fans hate that. But my question is, why can't the NCAA, which that's a stupid question because they lose anything that they put up in court, but why can't they, in agreement with the schools, I guess this would have to be an agreement with the players somehow, but of saying, you know, in a five-year period, you can't play for more than three schools at a minimum, something.
Yeah, well, they actually used to have rules like that. I mean,
oh, I know.
So it used to be if you transfer, you have to sit out a year. Then they changed it. All right, you get one free transfer. If you transfer more than that, then you have to sit out a year. So that limited transfers, obviously. But last December 2023, they lost a lawsuit related to their transfer rules, and it said your rules that make athletes have to sit out if they transfer a year violate antitrust law. And so that at that point, that was when there were really no transfer limits anymore. And so that's why now you're seeing basically free agency every year in college athletics. They would love to put more restrictions back in place like that, but they know they'll get sued and based on the precedent probably lose. So their hope is to get an antitrust exemption from the federal government. And that's part of it. In addition to having some compensation restrictions like you see in the House settlement, they would also most likely use an antitrust exemption like that to put some more limits on transferring than exists now. So
every time my first thought was to ask what's the likelihood of that. But, and before I even got that question out, the first thought that came to mind, it seems like every time there might be some politicians that see the sense that it needs to make for that to happen, you've always got somebody from a state of a school who seems to benefit from the way things are right now, says, oh, not so fast, and they fight it. But what are the chances of the NCAA getting this exemption for antitrust?
I think it's still pretty low right now. From everything I'm hearing, they were very hopeful when Republicans basically swept, you know, the presidency, the House, and the Senate. They're pretty hopeful at that point that they would get something through this year. But from what I'm hearing, the chances of that have been waning a bit. There's obviously lots of other things going on in the federal government these days. So I'm not sure if college sports are at the high top of the priority list at the moment. But we'll have to see. It's possible for sure. But I think it's still a pretty low chance of getting a federal bill passed that does have that antitrust exemption, because that's a pretty big ask for any industry to get from the federal government.
But the NCAA is different in so many ways. They're an individual private organization. I believe that they're are they 501 or 503C, whatever the nonprofit.
Yep.
I would think that because that partly that. It's they're not trying to benefit themselves. It's just trying to control an industry that's out of control. But at the same time, I know you can't limit people on what they make without a phrase, collective bargaining.
Yeah.
And is that something you see coming, or is that just far down the road?
I think that's eventually where we'll end up. It's just a question of how long it takes to get there. Because if we assume that the federal government does not give the NCAA or just college athletics in general an antitrust exemption, and they're not able to put in those types of player movement restrictions and some of the other compensation restrictions that are part of the House settlement, then really the only way to have those rules that'll be enforceable is to agree to them with the athletes. which is what you see like in the NBA and the NFL with all their free agency rules and even like the draft and salary caps and things like that. They're able to have those because the league collectively bargained those rules with the Players Association, which gives you an interest exemption.
I'm wondering if there's any way that with all that is at stake, would the players agree to anything like that? Because as soon as they do, they're going to cut their power. They're going to cut their negotiating power, and they're definitely going to cut their, I don't want to say their value, but the possibility of what they can bring in.
Yeah, I think to get players to agree to that, there would have to be obviously some things given up from the school conference NCAA side, and maybe something like guaranteed minimum payments. Because right now, although athletes are making a lot of money in a lot of cases, they're not guaranteed anything. It's not like if you go play football at Ohio State, you're guaranteed to get paid any set amount. Like in the NFL, there's a minimum salary and things like that. So maybe we'll see something like that. Say, we'll give you guys this, you know, minimum salary plus other guaranteed benefits and things in return. Here are the things that we want you to agree to. That sort of help from the school side, help us manage rosters and things like that.
Mitt Winter with us. Mitt is one of the premier college athletics attorneys, and we're talking about the House settlement. What you just mentioned, guaranteed payments, which I you've got a school like Texas who like 2 years ago guaranteed every offensive lineman $50,000, which that was just a get ahead of the game kind of a thing. But one question I don't also want to understand is if a player wanted to, why can't they sign a multi-year deal with a school, especially now with the House settlement coming?
They definitely can. And I've seen some multi-year deals for sure. They're not that usual, but there are definitely some college athletes signing multi-year deals. In the past, they've been with a collective because that's who's been paying athletes basically in return for attending and playing for a specific school. But, you know, moving forward, they will be able to enter into a contract like that directly with a school. I think from the athlete side, they don't necessarily want to do that because they want to keep their options open and their negotiating power. And if they're locked in for a number of years, then they kind of lose some of that power. But if you're going to get paid a lot of money and you want that guarantee for 2 years or 3 years or whatever it is, it could definitely make sense, especially if you're someone who's like, I like this team. I like this school. I don't want to go anywhere else. So I'm not worried about losing that leverage that I have of I can leave, you know, after the end of the season. So we might see some more of that in the future. In schools, they can kind of use those agreements to try and limit some of the player movement as well. And so I think we'll see some more of that from their side as well. The real issue is even if you sign a multi-year, you know, they're still just NIL contracts, even when they're signing these contracts with schools. So it's not an employment contract. So they can't really keep someone at their school and with their team, even if they sign a multi-year deal. There are ways to try and make it harder to leave, like include buyouts and things like that. But it's almost the same scenario as you see with coaches. You know, they obviously have multi-year deals, but if they want to leave, they leave and go coach somewhere else. They just pay their buyout. And then it's a question of, is the school that they left going to enforce that buyout? So I think we'll see similar situations with player contracts with schools.
You know, I think back to Nigel Pack. He was one of the first big deals that he got from Miami. And it was a two-year, $400,000 deal each year. Mm-hmm. And so I keep thinking about these multi-year deals that no one else has had, and he had one way back, but there hasn't been anything since. And it's probably because people, like you said, don't want to limit what their value might be. But was his a multi-year deal or was his consecutive yearly deals?
I don't know. All I know is what was reported. I haven't seen the deal. Just from the reporting, it sounded like it was for 2 years. One deal for 2 years as opposed to 2 1-year deals. But I haven't seen it. But I like I said, I have seen some deals with collectives where it's one deal for multiple years. So they do exist.
And then programs like Indiana football, they had a rise last year that was out of nowhere. Now you have the house settlement on top of that, which they're the same as every other Big Ten team. But this is going to be something they haven't had as far as they had their NIL that they built up last year for football. But obviously this is going to add a huge chunk of change to that because 75% of the money coming in for the rev share will go towards football. And it's going to be interesting to see who really uses that wisely. And because if you're not doing well in football, you're coming in dragging in the caboose.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how allowing schools to fund the NIL payments and contract with the athletes changes things, like you said. So in the past 3 years, it's been totally, totally reliant on donors funding all of that. And obviously some schools have a bigger donor base, a bigger fan base, especially depending on what sport it is. But moving forward under the house settlement terms, as you alluded to, schools will just be able to fund those payments now. And obviously if you're talking about a school like Indiana, any Big Ten school, they have the financial resources to pay out the same amount as the Ohio States of the world. So that's part of the reasoning behind the house settlement, is to put people on more of a level playing field where it's not just reliant on which school has donors that are willing to kick in more money than this school. It's all right, let's set the salary cap of $20.5 million for every sport. And then, as you said, most schools are going to pay, especially at least at the P4 level, 15% of that 20 million to football. 75% of that 20 million to football, which is around $15 million. So theoretically, everyone's sort of on that same level playing field. The big question there is, do the rules that are part of the house settlement that are intended to limit booster and collective deals, do those work? And are people going to figure out workarounds for those rules? Because schools are still going to keep collectives around to pay over the cap. So we'll have to see how that all goes.
Well, that's going to be the difference maker. That's what is going to differentiate Michigan and Ohio State from Indiana. Obviously, Michigan, the money that they are able to bring in and make, it dwarfs a lot of other programs. You have 110,000 people in a stadium every week versus 60. That's a huge, huge get, plus the money they're able to pull in. So they're always going to be ahead. It's not going to equalize everything, but we've seen how this has equalized both football and basketball across the board. We just watched one of the greatest NCAA tournaments ever because it was how it competitive it was. Football, we've seen teams like Indiana that are part of the college football playoffs that were a walking corpse of a program. So it's actually been, there has been very great positives because that has been incredible to see.
No, I do think you're right. At the P4 level, I think talent has been more widely dispersed amongst teams. You know, you're not going to have a team that has 4 5-star QBs anymore because those guys, they want to play. Plus you're not going to be able to afford probably 4 or 5-star QBs anymore. So they're going to go somewhere else where they're going to be able to get paid more than if they're the 4-string guy at whatever school they're at. So I do agree that it has created, you know, some more competitive balance in that way.
Jason's got a question about the agents, but I'm not sure what the question is, Jason. So throw it up there and I'll ask, but how much do agents play a part now in this transfer portal? Are they pretty much handling everything for most players? Or is this just guys that are making X number and above because the guys don't want to lose the money?
They're prevalent for sure, and it's not just your starting QB, starting left tackle that has an agent. It's very widespread. Most guys on like a P4 roster in football and basketball probably have an agent these days. And so they're very involved in the process of figuring out what school they're going to go to, how much they're going to get paid, what the contract's going to look like, all of that stuff.
Now, one thing I did hear, I forget who told me this, and I guess I wouldn't call them out if I did, but that in college, agents are getting up to 25% of what they're getting for these players, and say, like, in a professional deal, it's between 5 to 10 max.
Yeah, it varies. It's obviously dependent on what the agreement between the athlete and the agent, what it says their commission is. But there are definitely some agents out there taking commissions that are higher than probably what they should be. Like you said, in the NFL, if you're a player contract agent, you're limited to 3% of the athlete's salary as your commission. But that's because the NFLPA has set those limits and regulates agents. There's no similar type of system in college athletics right now. So really, anyone can call themselves an NIL agent. They can charge whatever commission they want. And there's really no regulation going on out there. And a lot of the athletes and their families, they don't know what they should be paying. And oftentimes they'll sign athlete representation agreements without even reading what the language says and what the commission is. And they find out later after they've already signed an agreement they can't get out of with an agent. So from the athlete perspective, it's really important to make sure you're actually reading what you're signing and hopefully having someone that knows what they're doing take a look at it before you
sign
it as well.
You would think in this day and age, but never assume anything, because this is an area where a lot of these guys have not, especially if they're incoming freshmen or young or coming in from a smaller program, the parents probably have no previous involvement in anything like that. And unfortunately, the schools can't do anything really to help them, because that happens before they get to a particular school. So where does the education come from?
Yeah, I mean, some of it comes from the school, but you're right. There's sort of a void there. There are some groups out there that are trying to fill that void. One's called athletes.org. It's basically trying to become the Players Association for college athletes, or it is the Players Association for college athletes. It's not a union like the NFLPA or the NBPA, because the athletes aren't employees, but it is filling that role. It's just a matter of athletes being aware of some of these resources. You know, there are so many high school and college athletes. It's not like the NFL or NBA where you have 300 or whatever number of players you have, obviously more than the NFL, but that's an issue. There needs to be some more education out there, and athletes just need to be aware of the resources that do exist.
Now, I know agents they still have to be registered with the NCAA, right?
No, they do not have to be registered with the NCAA. They have a voluntary registration system. You don't have to register.
There's no control whatsoever.
No, I mean, a lot of states require someone acting as an athlete agent to register. But that's pretty simple. You just fill out a form and pay some money.
So I could be an agent.
Oh yeah, for sure. And there's not really much enforcement going on at the state level, even though in a lot of states you are supposed to be registered as an agent if you're working with an athlete in that state. But those laws are never really enforced. So anyway, yeah, like I said, anyone can call themselves an agent, whether they're registered in a state with the NCAA or not.
I'm surprised that you're not seeing more parents get involved in that aspect, because we've seen it before in the AAU situations where they coach the team and whatnot. And that way that they, A, control their kids' stuff, but then they also keep everything in the family that way.
No, there's definitely some of that where parents are now basically serving the role of an agent. And sometimes it starts with their own child, and then it kind of blossoms into doing it with their child's friends or teammates. And so they kind of expand into working with other athletes. So there's definitely some of that happening. But the issue there is, do they have experience? working as an agent? Do they know how to read a contract? Do they understand the contract they're reading before they have an athlete sign it, things like that?
How can they, not in any way kind of put in something that says, hey, you do have to be registered as far as more than just registered. You have to be some kind of certification. I mean, I know the pro leagues have that, but is that part of collective bargaining, which this would, and this would be a positive side of collective bargaining for the players, because they're losing quite a bit of money right there. 15% of $1 million.
Yeah.
That's $150,000. And I'm not very good at math.
No. Yeah. The reason they do have control over the agents in the pro sports is because of collective bargaining, and the unions then have that power to regulate the agents. And so there's no equivalent structure in college athletics. And so that's why there's no agent regulation right now. So like you said, that would be, in my opinion, a very large benefit of collective bargaining.
How did this sport go from being one of the most boxed in, tight, buttoned up everything to complete opposite, 180, everything off the table, just do whatever you want, Wild West, the whole deal, and it's Katie bar the door?
Yeah, it's kind of been a gradual process, but also like a fast process. And when I say gradual, there have been some court decisions, basically, you know, starting with the O'Bannon case in 2014 up to the Alston case, which is in 2021. And then some of those other cases on like the transfer rules. And there was one where the NCAA lost last year on their NIL recruiting rules. So it's been a whittling away of NCAA rules by the courts, but then also from the NCAA and the conference side, also failing to be proactive in the face of some of these court decisions. I think for such a long time, courts were very deferential to the NCAA rules. And I think the NCAA and others thought that would kind of last forever. Well, that didn't happen. And so when courts started chipping away at their power, I think they didn't act quickly enough to kind of get their arms around everything and put in place a model that actually works. And they're kind of trying to do that with the House settlement, but it remains to be seen, you know, how effective that's going to be, because I do think there's going to be more lawsuits coming out of that as well.
I was just getting ready to say, even if the House settlement gets passed and locked in, how many suits would you expect to still follow that? Like who was it? Chris Jenkins suing the NCAA from Villanova. He hit a great shot, and it's get used quite a bit, but he's part of getting paid anyway. It goes back to 2016. So I think he's suing because he doesn't think he's getting enough for what he could have earned. And why can't somebody from 2015 sue them?
They possibly could. They're the 1983 North Carolina State basketball team has sued the NCAA for basically the same types of allegations. They're claiming that every year the NCAA uses their clips from their you know, national championship game when they won in 83. So they claim they're owed money from that. And just generally, there will be more lawsuits even after the House settlement, if it is approved. It includes a salary cap that wasn't negotiated by the athletes. So I think we'll see some lawsuits around that. We'll probably see some lawsuits around the restrictions on the collective and booster deals. We'll see some Title IX lawsuits. So there'll still be plenty of lawsuits. And then the employment issue, which we've kind of been talking about, still is out there, and that's not going to be affected by the House settlement at all. So that's going to still move forward.
And I think there's already a Title IX lawsuit right now. It's one of the things that's sitting there. But this really has nothing to do with Title IX, in my opinion. It's not a man-woman thing. And yeah. I don't get. It's just like a few years ago with the national women's soccer team and the national men's soccer team, the money was different. Well, but no one goes in to find out, why is the money different? Well, the money's different because their program brings in that kind of money. Yours does not. Just like earlier, someone posted and I reset that last year, there were 18.9 million viewers for the women's Final Four championship. This year it was 8.5 something. It's all star driven. In women's basketball is a big roller coaster. It's men's basketball and football. Those are the issues that drive any train, all the athletics that you want. And I know there are some schools that have great programs in like women's basketball and other things, but they still, it doesn't really move the needle as far as making the cash.
Yeah, that's why, as we touched on earlier, schools are going to pay 75% of their salary cap to the football team, 15% around is going to go to the men's basketball team. At some schools, 5% maybe to women's basketball, or if they focus more on volleyball, and then the remaining 5% kind of distributed amongst other sports. But the reason that's going to happen is because, you know, generally somewhere around 75% of the revenue at schools is generated by the football program. And that obviously varies depending on the school, but that's why it's going to be paid out that way.
Mitt, I cannot thank you enough. I know many of you out there may not have a need for Mitt's services, but if you did, he is certainly available. I see you're in Kansas City, and so I'm assuming when the NCAA was there, was that an impetus for you going towards the direction that you have in your law practice?
I actually went to law school in San Francisco and lived out there for 10 years, but I did represent the NCAA initially when I got out of law school in a couple of cases. And so that is how I got started in this college sports legal world.
Crazy. I have a friend that is a former NCAA attorney and drawing a blank on his name right now. I hope he's not listening because he will not be happy. But, man, I cannot thank you enough. Mitt Winter. From Kenny Hertz and Perry. Is that right?
Yep.
Correct. Located in Kansas City. Appreciate you, my friend. Again, thank you so much for taking the time, unplanned, and you were incredible as always. Really, really, really appreciate you, Mitt.
No problem. Thanks for having me on again. Happy to do it anytime.
Thank you, sir. Mitt Winter joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Hey, thank you so much for being with us as always. We greatly appreciate you. What a great, informative conversation with Mitt. Mitt Winter has been on with us multiple times before, an attorney in the sports world, especially involving the House settlement, which is in the closing stages of approval, which it's completely expected it's going to happen. They just got some stuff they got to get out of the way, of course, like some of these lawsuits, some of them will be afterwards anyway. It won't matter. So, but we'll see how it goes. Tomorrow on the program, Dylan Sin, Kyle Nenrip, and the captain, Sir Rick Bozich, joins us as always from WDRB.com. Catch up with him now after things are starting to, I don't want to say settle down, but to come into place. We'll see what's next for Indiana. We'll have Alec Lasley on this week. Joe Tipton from On Three. As things continue to come out for Indiana, don't forget, go to thehoosier.com and subscribe for the latest and constant update information. Cannot thank everybody enough, as always, for joining us today. It's a great one, as always, and I hope you enjoyed it. Feel sorry for everybody. Anybody that's dealing with the floodwaters, man, I hear you. I feel for you. I cannot believe how high some of these tributaries are, especially like down in southern Indiana, my area where I'm from, the Louisville area. I saw one of the restaurants, Captain's Quarters, that they did something unique. They filled the restaurant full of water before it got to them. Smart thinking. Well, hopefully we can do some smart thinking tomorrow. Go out, have yourselves a great day. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everybody. Jim Coyle with Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. Make sure you are a subscriber wherever you podcast or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. And for the most up-to-date news on Indiana basketball, football, and recruiting news, go to thehoosier.com now with On3. Just go to thehoosier.com and subscribe today. On3 has great national writers like Ari Wasserman, Andy Staples, and Steve Wiltfong covering football, Pete Nakos, Jamie Shaw, and Joe Tipton breaking basketball stories every day. In addition to that, our own local coverage with Alec Lasley, Kyler Staley, and Zach Browning covering everything Indiana just for you. Go to thehoosier.com, subscribe today. Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.